back by no one's demand but our own from not sunny. It's still pretty scenic. Snowed in Elizabeth Park, Nashville, Tennessee. And of course, from the DraftKings Sportsbook Studios, it is the 615 Sessions Podcast, powered by Two Rivers Ford and brought to you as always by A to Z Sports and A to Z Sports Nashville.com. I hope that you guys are safe. I hope that you're warm. I hope that you have power, because the snowpocalypse, which here in Tennessee consists of about, what do we have on the ground, about 2 inches of snow? Yeah, it's only happened twice in the 5 years that I've lived here, but yet the city is shut down. We are all closed indoors, much like the pandemic. So what else to do but podcast? And we have a fun one for you today. We're going to do things a little differently, though. Because Titans GM John Robinson spoke for the first time today since they cut Vic Beasley in November, we're going to lead with 5 good minutes on that and then get to the bulk of our conversation with Alex Doherty and Adam Vingan, talk a little shop about blowing up the Preds. All of that is ahead right after I remind you about our good friends at Two Rivers Ford. They are the people that you know you can trust in Middle Tennessee for nearly 40 years. They are doing the best for you when it comes to customer service. The all-new 2021 Ford F-150 is now in stock at Two Rivers Ford. You can go check them out in Mount Juliet at the dealership once all of this melts and we are able to move around freely and easily once again, or you can go through their available inventory online at tworiversford.com. I'm looking at all of the great new Ford F-150s right now, the XL, the XLT, the King Ranch, all of these things, the Lariat. I mean, they're beautiful vehicles, and you can check them all out right now and test drive them once we are less snowbound there at Two Rivers Ford. All right, let's do 5 good minutes right out of the gate. Because we are in a situation now that with Isaiah Wilson in particular. So John Robinson spoke today to the assembled Zoom media, the first Zoom of the 2021 NFL season, at least for Titans media. And so we talked about a great many topics. We talked about Isaiah Wilson. We talked about the upcoming offseason. We talked about the limitations as it relates to things like pro days that aren't currently on schedule, Zoom video conferencing, the 5 that they're allowed to have as the replacements for their face-to-face interactions. So many different things that came up over the course of our time talking with John Robinson. But the thing that really popped was the comments on Isaiah Wilson. So what John says, you know what? I'll let John speak for himself, and then we can talk about it after the fact.
I just wondered about the future of Isaiah Wilson. Anything you can share on conversations you've had with him, his status, what you want to hear and see from him to make you feel like he's committed and wants to do this?
Yeah, I think, we put him on the reserve non-football illness list there. I haven't spoken to him since that list got put out. You know, I think we did a lot of work a year ago leading up to selecting him. The evaluation process, talking to different sources, visiting with him countless numbers of times, and for whatever reason, the player that this fall was here in Nashville wasn't the guy that was that we spent time with last year. So I think, he's going to have to make a determination if he wants to do everything necessary to play pro football. And that's going to be, on him. I know what the expectation level is here. It's no different than any other player on the football team. You know, we have a certain standard that we want players to prepare and perform at professionally and as people. A lot of work to be done there.
How do you feel about things at this point? I know you just said you haven't talked to him. How do you feel about where things stand now, and how close are you to feeling like you have to move on?
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. You know, I'm constantly monitoring the situation. We have people that have been in contact with him that I've talked through, so kind of third party wise. But we'll see how that one goes.
So that was Titans GM John Robinson. Not, you know, excoriating is too harsh a word, but he did not have have kid gloves on when he was discussing the former first round pick, who he has, as he said, not spoken to since placing Isaiah on the reserve non-football list last year in like week 16 or 17. All of this to say that this is a player that many of you expected to be cut today. I think that was largely what was being circulated when I put out on Twitter that John Robinson was going to hold an off-season press conference. Everybody freaked out. They thought it was about cutting Isaiah because everybody sees what's happening with Isaiah on social media. He hasn't been shy about essentially being double middle fingers to the things that he should or should not be doing, or at least not showing it off to the public. Whether it looks like you're smoking something that you probably shouldn't be smoking, but your hand is covering it, and so you think that's acceptable to post on your social media. Whether you are videoed or photographed among, you know, bikini-clad women and thousands of single-dollar bills on boats in Miami when you're supposed to be taking time to yourself to get things right. And of course, that's all been well documented. The DUI is one thing. It seems like eons ago, it's damn near a year ago since he got a DUI. And everything since then has, I don't want to say it's worse, because DUI is a really, really serious infraction, but everything has just spiraled with this dude in a way that I don't know that I've ever seen anything like this before. My depth of knowledge with the NFL, it's not that great. Not to say that I don't know things about football, but, you know, I've only watched football for so long. I'm sure there have been many, many first-round picks over the course of football history that have been malcontents to a degree, but never one in the social media age that just so publicly doesn't give a shit. And that's the biggest problem with Isaiah. It's the fact that, you know, many, and you know, you take the optics for what they're worth, right? Isaiah Wilson doesn't need to be posting all manner of workout videos for me to know and be comforted that Isaiah Wilson's in the gym. But it's that Isaiah Wilson is posting nothing of the like and posting all manner of private jets and birthday celebrations with the giant Oreo pizza cookie cakes and looking to be wildly out of shape and just general apathy towards what it is to be a football player. John didn't say Isaiah by name when he later on in the press conference talked about, you know, we want players, and I'm paraphrasing here, but essentially we want players who love football, who don't just want, hell, I'll read the quote. We have to continue to find guys that love ball. That's the one thing that we want. Guys that love ball. Guys that want to be pro football players. Not guys that just put pro football player as their hashtag on their Instagram or their Snapchat or their Twitter. We want guys that actually want to play the game of pro football because it is a strain. Pro football is hard, and you have to love, really love football and want to do it. And that is more than just putting it in your Twitter as your occupation. That's not saying Isaiah Wilson directly, but we all know who he's talking about, right? And so the saga of Isaiah Wilson here in 5 Good Minutes, it just continues to roll on in a way that is public and quite cringe-worthy to all parties involved, in a way that just makes you say, what the hell are we even doing here? How much longer do we want to continue this charade? If you're so far out on Isaiah Wilson at this point, maybe you're going to give him an opportunity, but the fact that you haven't even talked to this guy, you know, just says to everybody, you don't really have an interest in dealing with him, in dealing with all the crap that comes with Isaiah Wilson. And make no mistake, it is just unmitigated crap, and it's constant. And John Robinson is the person who's ultimately going to be held responsible for Isaiah Wilson, because that was the guy that he picked. And they, you know, they said they vetted him. They said they went through all these things. And yet here Isaiah Wilson sits, you know, on a private jet. Looks like he's enjoying himself. I wish someday I can live that life. But I will not have the means probably in my lifetime. Although I've made a very successful career as somebody who just, you know, sits in their home office in the middle of a snowstorm pandemic and talks into a microphone to you guys. But I hope to one day live the lifestyle that Isaiah Wilson is living. The problem is Isaiah Wilson hasn't earned that lifestyle yet. 5 good minutes here on the 615 Sessions. We're going to get to Alex and Vingan momentarily. I'm going to tell you quickly about our friends at DraftKings Sportsbook. It is not quite time for the madness that is college basketball in March, but that doesn't mean that the fun has to wait. DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app, is giving all new players the chance to cash $100. New customers can bet $1 on any team to hit a three-pointer in any basketball game this week. And if your team makes a basket, makes a three, you cash $100. It's an exceptional bet. It's a no-brainer offer. They have profit boosts. They have no-brainers. They have all manner of things to get you going and to make you immediately successful when it comes to the sports wagering that is now legal in the state of Tennessee. I did this I did the 50% profit boost. I did not do the $1 to make $100, 1 to 100 odds, because I'm not a new user, but I bet Iowa State plus 11 tonight, or this afternoon rather, at Oklahoma State. I got the 50% profit boost. That means you can wager a minimal amount and still make twice as much as you would otherwise. DraftKings Sportsbook, that's the place where you have to be going. And you have to use the promo code A to Z Sports. So go download the DraftKings Sportsbook app right now as you're listening to this podcast. Plug in that promo code A2Z Sports, that's A-T-O-Z Sports, to get your shot to turn $1 into $100 when you bet on any team to hit a three-pointer in any basketball game this week. Promo code A to Z Sports for new customers to get a shot at 100 to 1 odds on any basketball team to hit a three-point shot, only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Remember, though, you must be 21 or older, Tennessee only. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. New customers only. Restrictions apply. Winnings paid out in 4 $25 free bets. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789. DraftKings Sportsbook, because we do this from the DraftKings Sportsbook studios, promo code A to Z Sports. Let's talk to Adam Vingan and Alex Doherty about blowing up the Preds. Back here, 615 Sessions podcast from the DraftKings Sportsbook studios. Vingan, make sure you use that promo code A to Z Sports. Adam Vingan of The Athletic and 102.5 The Game from time to time. And Alex Doherty, our Preds writer for A to Z Sports, Nashville.com, have joined me here on the podcast. Hello, gentlemen. You look well. You look warm. I hope you are not slipping and sliding out in the frigid conditions that we find ourselves in.
I have not stepped outside my front door, so.
I've gone into the backyard to walk the dog, but that's it.
Just into the backyard. See, I've literally, the reason I delayed this podcast is because my girlfriend is from Florida. And so she is in not a state of panic, but she is distraught by the weather that we have at present. And I'm from Indiana, where this is not, you know, this is nothing. This is a Tuesday in mid-April for me. So I had to go and, well, not had to, got to go pick her up from her apartment, bring her to the house, so that if we experienced any loss of power tonight, she would not be in a state of panic.
That is the danger, losing power. So far, obviously, everything's fine, but I assume most people are fine in terms of power outages.
I mean, if I didn't have power, I wouldn't have Wi-Fi, and we couldn't get this shit off the ground. So we're doing good so far.
I think I've lost power like once in 6 years of living here.
Ooh,
so
humble brag.
Yes, very lucky.
I lost power for about 6 days during or after the tornado, and that was close to destitute as I've ever been. I was taking cold showers, which I would not recommend.
As a freshman in high school, when I was still living at home in Virginia, we lost power for 6 days after, I don't remember which hurricane, we got hit by a lot of them. We were without power for 6 days. And I remember at one point hooking up my PlayStation 2 to the generator so that I could play Madden without power.
Excellent.
So that's the extent of my significant power outage as significant as it goes.
It's just priorities. But anyway, we're not here to talk about natural disasters. We're not here to talk about power outages.
Well, we are here to talk about a natural disaster. It's just a different kind of disaster.
A very different disaster.
And a different kind of power outage, perhaps a power play outage.
Look at those play on words.
I talk for a living, Bing, and this is what I do. Anyway, the Nashville Predators stink. They will play a game by the time that this podcast is heard. They will play Dallas, who I believe, if I heard correctly on the Preds Nashcast, which you can subscribe, rate, and review to in this very same podcast feed, they have 10 games remaining between Dallas and Tampa Bay, in which they are currently 0-6 against those two teams. So it's not getting better, and they've just split a series against terrible, terrible Detroit, where they actually got outscored in that series. And now the entire internet, because this is the first weekend without football, everybody directs their attention to the local professional hockey team, and they are met largely with scorn. So Vingan, where do we start? Who do you point the finger at? Do you want to fire people? Do you want to just purge the roster? You want to start selling people off for parts? What do you want to do?
I feel like I'm playing Roller Coaster Tycoon or something.
That's basically what this podcast is.
Basically, the Predators are one of those roller coasters you would build in that game that you would purposely not finish just so that people would go over the edge and die. we all did it. If you're listening, you played Roller Coaster Tycoon. We all did it.
Yeah, there's nothing sadistic about that at all. It's just a part of growing up.
Exactly. Yeah, it's not going well, as you said, Buck. And you know, I have been here for it will be 6 years next month since I moved here. And in my 6 years covering this team, I have never seen the anger that I am currently experiencing, not me personally, but, you know, by covering the team and being around them every day, tangentially, I absorb that anger. I have never seen the fan base angrier than I have in the last couple of weeks. It is insane, to put it bluntly, just how angry the Predators fan base is. And while I can certainly understand some of the anger, because a lot of the vocal portion of the fan base feels as if though they were sold a false bill of goods by this franchise. They made it to the Stanley Cup final. It was, to use that word again, a miraculous run. They won the President's Trophy as the best team in the regular season the following year. Perhaps that definitely influenced personnel decisions. And now that bill is coming due for the organization with nothing to show for it. You look at some other teams around the NHL who are in the midst of or have recently experienced this sort of downturn. You think of the Chicago Blackhawks, you think of the Los Angeles Kings, to an extent you could talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins or the Washington Capitals. The caveat, of course, is that all of those teams have won at least one. Most of them have won multiple Stanley Cups. So their fan bases can live with the fact that they are experiencing, in the specific instances of the Kings and Blackhawks, those fan bases can live with the fact that their team is going through some lean years because they've won, what, a combined 5 Stanley Cups between them in the past decade. The Predators did not do that, of course. So, you know, who am I pointing the finger at? I mean, I've got fingers pointed in a lot of different directions. I point my finger, my sharpest finger point is at David Poile. And it goes back to what I was saying before, that everybody remembers, and I don't mean to hog all the time here, Alex and Buck.
Gas bag.
Yes, such a gas bag. Anyway, David Poile infamously, after they lost in the second round of the postseason in 2018 to the Winnipeg Jets, who were the second best team in the league that season, the Predators were the best team in the league, made the decision not to make any changes to the roster. And at the time, you could sell that because they had just won the President's Trophy. It feels like that may have, in hindsight, was a terrible mistake. And now it feels like they're trying to dig their way out of it. The problem is that their roster is just so poorly constructed, and they have so much money tied up in guys who are not performing up to those particular, you know, their specific salaries, that the answers to fix this are hard to discover. And that's where I think the anger comes from.
Alex, is it fixable?
Is it fixable? Wow. I'm not entirely sure. The only thing that I would add to Adam's to how he put that, and I don't think there's anything I disagree with at all.
That's because he talked the whole damn time. That's his fault.
No, we talked about this. Link and I did on our podcast. Obviously, as you mentioned, there's a lot to that. But I think that the sort of the key to our points were number one, that this has been slowly boiling over the course of time. This is not something that just like so all of a sudden we realize David Poyle is not good at this. There are, I mean, you can pinpoint so many benchmarks of this was a bad decision, this was a bad decision, this was a bad decision. And just over time, he has clearly piled up more misses than hits in the grand scheme of things. Look, he had some grace period at the beginning of the Predators franchise. He had some real success in building a very low budget, conscious kind of team in the mid 2000s, and then into the early 2010s. Barry Trotz leaves. He really does a good job to get Peter Laviolette, because he was able to revamp and maybe instill a different kind of coaching with that team. Obviously, that was a success for much of it until the very end. But again, there's been so many misses that have piled up. I mean, the list is so long, and that are really manifesting on the ice right now. The defense is the worst that it's looked. The special teams are the worst pair of special teams in the league. The power play isn't the worst power play, and the penalty kill isn't the worst penalty kill, but they're both really bad, and that makes for a terrible combination. The goaltending is just the Pekarinen and UC Saros are not saving the team like we once saw. Can they fix it? My take is that they cannot fix it unless they have new leadership. That's my take. So if they get new leadership and they totally blow everything up, and there's a lot of ways you can blow it up. There's some key pieces you're going to have to keep. Of course, Roman Josi is one you have to keep because he's got a no move clause. But that's about it. I mean, there's not a lot of other pieces that I would consider ones that you can't move, except for the guys that haven't played yet, like Tomasino and Askarov, the prospects. But the fix is, to me, all about at the top. If you fix the top, then you can move on and improve your franchise.
So I kind of look at this just from a general roster construction in professional sports perspective, right? Like the thing that I've always admired from afar about David Poyle, because I don't have the kind of interactions that you two do with him, but he has always at least strived to have a degree of public transparency, at least for the sake of the fan base. But the thing that I get hung up on with not just David Poyle, but executives in professional sports in general, when it comes to personnel people, is that how often of them get married to their own guys because they made the decisions to bring them in. They knew that they were reliable because they made the right picks. They found the right pieces. They rewarded them with big contracts. So, of course, it's going to work out. But time and time again, not just David Poyle, not just the Nashville Predators, you see it across any sport. There is such an unwillingness to move on from familiarity that even as David Poyle, at least over the course of my tenure here, I've been here a year less than Vingan has over the course of 5 years, heading into six almost. David Poyle has been pretty upfront about we need to make changes. We need to be better. We need to do these things. And, you know, has taken action in his from at least what he believes to be the correct actions that were taken. And it's just kind of fallen apart because the talent is not there. The players that they paid are largely unreliable, whether it be Ryan Johansson, the disaster that was Kyle Turris, on and on. I know you and Link, Alex, talked about the PK Subban Shea Weber trade, and whether, you know, that was just criticism in retrospect or not of how all those things ended up panning out. But all, you know, the results are what they are. This is a team that is largely incompetent. And there's enough of a sample size to say, okay, it's not just the roster. It's not just Poyle. It's John Hines too. And so when Alex says, blow it up, Vingan, I'm with him. Just enough of this. Like, start selling dudes for parts. See what you can get for Philip Forsberg. And I imagine it has to be a lot.
Unfortunately, there is not one big red button that you can hit that says rebuild. And then everything just miraculous. I'm using miraculously too much. Magically, fixes itself.
He's a wordsmith, people.
Yes, wordsmith. So when you look back at some of the contracts and moves that David Poyle has made over the past 5 years, you know, no one complained at the time about the PK Subban, Shea Weber trade. I mean, PK Subban for 2 years was a star for this franchise.
I mean, yeah, definitely.
He played a significant role in getting them to the Stanley Cup final. The following year, he was a Norris Trophy finalist. His third season, you know, it was when you began to see the decline starting, and then they moved him for spare parts to clear the cap space. But Victor Arvidsson's contract, everybody thought that was a great contract, I think, for the most part. I don't want to speak, you know, I don't want to put a blanket statement, but I can't remember anybody being particularly upset about that contract.
I remember one.
Because I think Alex and I are thinking of the same person.
Was it Jared Stillman? Yes. Oh. Okay. Moving on. But most people,
God love him,
were not upset about it, especially because of how well Victor played in the first couple of years of that contract. When Ryan Johansson was signed, he was coming off of what was a fabulous playoff run for him until he was hurt. And you can certainly play revisionist history about what might happen if he never got hurt and continued to play that way and they faced the Penguins in the Stanley Cup final. You know, you can't necessarily say that they would have won the Stanley Cup, but I think they might have been more competitive in that series at least. So, you know, there are a couple of things though that were problematic. You know, David, I called it at the time that the three-team trade that brought in Kyle Turris was made, which was November of 2017. Matt Duchene was forever David Poyle's white whale. And he did whatever he could to get Duchene. And he, you know, I feel like Turris was sort of the consolation prize. And then they went out and got Duchene. And, you know, is he an $8 million player? No, but, you know, he had such a fascination with Matt Duchene that it was only a matter of time before he came here. But when I think about, you know, what this team can do in the short term, you know, because big moves like trading, you know, Ryan Johansson or Matt Duchene, for example, those are off-season moves. Those are Seattle expansion draft type moves. Those players aren't going to be traded in season because it's hard to move those players anyway, but then try moving them in season when no team has cap space because of the world that we're living in right now. So the first step is to basically trade any veteran on a short-term or expiring contract, excuse me. Trade Mikael Granlund, trade Eric Kalla, trade Brad Richardson, trade Nick Cousins. And here's the big one. The first major move that the Predators can make this season to start building towards a rebuild is trading Matthias Ekholm. That's the first thing that they should do. He is, in my opinion, their most valuable trade chip, probably overall, but definitely in season. It would make their expansion draft questions a lot simpler because they wouldn't have to worry about protecting him. He's got one more year on his deal. I think you could easily get a couple second round picks. I had someone tell me that Matthias Ekholm would be worth a first round pick on the trade market. I think, you know, it would be hard to get rid of Matthias Ekholm. He's been a steady guy on that blue line for several years, but these are the decisions you have to make. These are the hard choices you have to make when you're trying to rebuild a franchise. And I think the first major step they can in season is trade Matthias Ekholm.
So, Alex, I'm speaking from a place of ignorance because I don't know David Poyle. I've had very, very limited interactions with David Poyle. Is he capable of doing something like this? Like, would he make these difficult decisions as Vingan's just outlined? Would he be willing to concede that this roster is not in a place where it can be any kind of competitive? Because right now it's just flat out not.
I'm going to say no. Because it goes along with my theory that the team really can't get over this until they have new leadership, but I'm going to make a comparison here. So like, Have you ever guys see, have you guys ever seen the show Dragon's Den?
No,
I don't think so.
Have you've seen Shark Tank?
Yes.
So Shark Tank, I'm sorry, Dragon's Den is the British version of Shark Tank.
Naturally.
It's great. I love it.
Brits love dragons.
it's the exact same premise as Shark Tank, except British.
Is there a British Mr. Wonderful?
Yeah, oh, for sure. Yeah.
Does he have a crappy nickname?
No, he's Peter
Mr.
Jones.
Mr. Exquisite, that's, perhaps?
No, his name's Peter Jones. He's tall, he's handsome, and he's very mean.
So not Mr. Wonderful.
He's not physically, no, but he plays that role.
Quickly, not to cut Alex off at the knees, but why, if you knew that the vast majority of the audience is not going to know what the hell Dragon's Den is, did you not just go Shark Tank out of the gate?
Didn't know. I thought maybe there's a chance. Anyways.
Are you kidding me? I love the audience. I love all of you that are listening to this podcast. Largely, you are uncultured heathens.
Is it on BBC?
I thought there was a chance Adam would have heard of it, possibly. Maybe.
No, I'm not very much up on British culture. I'm sorry.
Okay. I am a bit of an Anglophile. I love British television. So anyways, beside the point, there was a recent episode I was watching where a guy goes to push his show, his product. I think he was selling socks or something, some sort of new sock.
Typical Dragon's Den thing.
Yeah. Right. Anyway, so he's selling his socks and he has like so much stock. He has like 400,000 socks that he can't sell. And he's looking for these entrepreneurs to like push his socks for him. And one of the entrepreneurs says, you have a problem of too much money. He basically said, your sock issue. And the reason I'm not investing, he said, is because you have a problem of too much money. And what happened is with this guy, and what I think has happened with David Poile, is by having too much money, by having too many resources, he stopped becoming resourceful. He stopped becoming shrewd with his deals. He stopped thinking smarter. He stopped thinking of making tough decisions between two things. He started just kind of throwing money at problems, making big splashy trades in order to make something happen. I mean, if you like, you mentioned the Ryan Johansson deal, like there was no way he's not going to sign Ryan Johansson to that big contract, but he doesn't even trade for Ryan Johansson if he doesn't have that money to sign him to it. Same thing with Matt Duchene. Same thing with the contract for Kyle Turris, which was a complete disaster.
I will give him credit for one thing, though, on the Kyle Turris front. And I'll always remember this. Our friend Jim Diamond asked David Poile at the press conference following that three-team trade about the contract, which was 6 years, $36 million, whether he had any hesitance, if he was hesitant to sign a player in his late 20s to that contract. And David's response was, well, they wanted eight. So give David credit for not signing him to an eight-year contract versus a six-year contract. Moving
that's
on.
That's like John Robinson sitting up there before us the week they cut Vic Beasley and say, well, we initially thought about a multi-year deal, and everybody just sitting back in their chair. The hell are you talking about? Anyway, I'm sorry, Alex.
Sorry, go ahead, Alex.
That's the point is, as soon as the pocketbook opened up and David Poile had a lot more resources, you got to remember, the first decade of this franchise was extremely penny wise. You know, there was not a lot of money to go around. Even when the league changed in 2005, 2006, the Predators still didn't spend a lot of money. I mean, the Paul Kariya contract was like huge. I mean, they had no idea.
That was what, like nine and a half over 2 years or something like
that? It was like barely $5 million a year. So that was a much different time. And David Poile was a different GM. I think when you give him these resources, when you give him all this time and money to work with, I think he thinks differently. He thinks differently than that. I think he would be much more successful in a early franchise kind of situation rather than one that's established, has a good fan base, has a really good situation there on Broadway, good fan team situation. But for some reason, when you just give him gobs of resources, he doesn't always make really good decisions. Maybe that's true for a lot of GMs, but I know it's true about David Poile.
And the question about what comes next, right? Because it's easy to say, well, David Poile shouldn't be the GM anymore. Well, the question is, who's next?
Right.
Because, you know, they're not going to fire David Poile. I mean, right. he almost literally built the franchise from the ground up. I mean, he's been here since day one. So, you know, they're not going to just kick him out. You know, there are plenty of examples, not just in the NHL, but in sports as a whole, where a GM who's getting up in years, or perhaps the team is looking for a different direction, they kick him upstairs. They make him, you know, the president of hockey operations, which David actually is already. But they, you know, they kick him upstairs.
It's a heady play by David to just go ahead and block the promotion that's not really a promotion. Say, no, right. I'll take that title too.
So I think a couple of examples, you know, 5-6 years ago, the Philadelphia Flyers made a change at GM. They brought in Ron Hextall, of course, famous Flyers goaltender, last week named the Pittsburgh Penguins GM. They brought him in and promoted his predecessor, Paul Holmgren, to president. So, you know, someone brought this, actually gave this example to me today, which is not hockey related, but I think would maybe best serve as a template, is John Elway with the Denver Broncos, because I believe John Elway was the president of football operations and the GM, but recently surrendered his GM responsibilities, remained the president of football operations, remains in an advisory capacity, but said that the general manager would have the final say over personnel decisions. Like, if the Predators are going to keep David Poile in some sort of front office position, it needs to be in a role where he does not have the final say over the product on the ice. He can be a sounding board, he can advise the GM, but it's ultimately the GM's has the final say. You don't want David to necessarily oversee the GM and still be able to, you know, be the puppet master, so to speak. I feel like if you're going to keep him, you have to keep him in a role where final decision-making responsibilities are completely taken out of his hands.
See, that's because you're right. They're not going to toss him out in the street. He means too much. And listen, rightfully so, David.
Or he could just retire.
Well, but can they
stay, then he can. Yeah.
Is there anybody in that organization who will go to David Poile and be like, listen, David, this needs to end in some form or fashion. We are going to give you the option to go out on your own terms, be that retirement, be that stepping into the kind of advisory role that Vingan is talking about. Can somebody do that with David Poile, though? I don't know enough about the inner workings of the organization to understand if David Poile has that kind of check to him. If there's somebody there that can approach him that way, given that his seniority supersedes almost anybody in the organization, not named the owner. Can David Poile be reasoned with on that point, do we think?
Alex, why don't you go ahead? Because I'm a gas bag.
I don't think so. I'll bring up one comparison, though. And I only know a little bit about this, and I know that you're tired of probably talking about this, but I mean, who was the person that was going to go to Philip Fulmer and tell him to step down over at UT Knoxville? I mean, that didn't happen, right?
The NCAA with a big old bucket of sanctions.
Exactly.
And listen, Phil, you can take your 1.3 and walk for the next 3 years. You're going to get about $300,000 a month. You're going to live a nice life. You're going to retire. You're going to be on, you know, you're going to be a legend of all time, and things will be, you know, you will be regarded by the fan base with some scorn for a while, but everything will work out for you. Get out of here.
Exactly. It took this outside entity, and one with quite an edge in the NCAA to do that. There is no such entity in the NHL that's going to come in and say, we need to remove David Poile, because it's just not going to happen. Yeah. No, I don't think so. I think it's going to have to be entirely intrinsic. It's going to have to come from within himself to say, it's time for me to move on. I need to retire or step aside, let someone else take over.
I also wonder if the Predators are owned by a conglomerate of business people. There's like 12 to 15 people, you know, listed in the media guide.
Majority stakeholder. There has to be.
There is. Okay. But it's not a singular owner. And I wonder if things would be different if the Predators had a singular front-facing owner. In NHL circles, I'm talking about someone like Ted Leonsis in Washington, or Tom Dundon in Carolina, or God forbid, Eugene Melnyk in Ottawa, you know, or Bill Foley in Vegas. You know, they are the primary owner. They have the biggest stake. Perhaps they own the entire team. I don't know how it works in other markets, but I wonder if there was more of a singular front-facing owner, if this would be different. And I can't speak to that specifically. I too am not, you know, I'm learning more. I'm trying to learn more about the inner workings of the ownership structure.
Adam, I just really want you to write an article that says that the Nashville Predators need someone like Eugene Melnyk.
Yes, exactly. That would go over well. That would overtake my recent John Hines story as my most unpopular take of all time. And I feel like, by the way, I knew that story about John Hines was going to go over like a wet fart, and it did. And I think, you know, perhaps I didn't articulate my point well enough, or perhaps people were so blinded by their rage towards John Hines that they don't care what my point was. And that happens sometimes too. But my argument was that this was not to say that John Hines is a perfect coach or a master tactician or a coach that's being held back by the roster that he's been given. My point is that this team has so many deeper issues in how it's constructed that very few coaches could squeeze more out of this group than what John is getting. That doesn't mean that John is going to be going to have a Barry Trotz like run in Nashville and be this coach, the coach of this team. No coaches are like that anymore, but you know what I'm saying. It's not as if though John is, you know, it was beyond reproach, because he has had, you know, he's made some decisions that are a bit head scratching. But my point was that I don't like Peter Laviolette near the end of his time here wasn't able to get much more out of this group. And I'm unconvinced that another coach would get more out of this group, which goes to Alex's point that I feel like if you're going to tear it down and you want to bring in a new coach for that, so be it. My argument was that John, if I'm handing out blame for what this team has looked like on the ice, John is maybe third on my list. He's not at the top of the list.
See, and if for those unfamiliar with the article, which you can get a subscription to The Athletic, they're running all kinds of specials. It's very cost effective and very informative for some of the best in sports journalism, such as Adam Vingan and Joe Rexroad and many of our other friends. When you're not reading, of course, Alex Doherty at AtoZSportsNashville.com. For the people that may not have seen the article, Vingan, you essentially, it came off, at least the headline, looked like a little bit of a defense of John Hines based on all of the issues. Just
this is why you can't just read the headline.
Yeah, but people and listen, I love everybody that's listening to this podcast, but people are largely dumb. Like we fight against this all the time. If you don't put it's honestly, it's on you, Vingan, because you underestimated their inability to find nuance or to not want to argue with just the headline itself and actually go in and see what.
And I will admit, because oftentimes you hear these stories all the time in journalism when people get mad at a headline. And the reporter will say to the person who's mad, I didn't write the headline, or reporters don't write the headlines. I will 100% fully admit I wrote that headline. And perhaps I could have had more nuance in it.
Just as an example of that, that just happened actually, Buck. So John Hines said today that Ryan Johansson traveled with the team. Ryan Johansson's been injured. He's been out. He's been declared as week to week. But then Ryan Johansson's traveled with the team to Dallas, and there's a chance that he might play in Columbus later this week.
Okay.
Which I think is probably sooner than most people thought. No one really knew the extent of the injury. But anyway, so I just put something out about it saying, hey, look, some good news. Finally, some good news. One of their bigger players is coming back from injury. And of course, naturally, people are just like, oh, Ryan Johansson's back. Where's the good news? So
exactly, because people. Right.
He's a constant whipping boy of Preds fans that Ryan Johansson, simply because he plays at a different pace than a lot of other players, simply because he's not diving headfirst into the goal like Victor Arvidsson, that he's not trying hard or that he's not as good a hard of a worker. When in reality, Ryan Johansson's probably the underlying statistics say that he's been one of the better players this year at 5-on-5, maybe not on the power play, but definitely at 5-on-5. And so anyways, it's just to your example of people don't read the articles. People don't care what's inside. They care about the headline. And the headline was Ryan Johansson's back.
Yeah.
So, not back, but you know.
And like with John, like there are so many things working.
Look at Vingan. He is so hell-bent on defending this.
We're on the topic. I'm trying to defend myself here.
No, listen, nobody else is going to do it for you, buddy. Get out there and
exactly.
Do it.
Nobody else is going to do it for me. There are a lot of things working against John Hines, and some of them are his own doing, of course. First of all, John is a much more mild-mannered individual than Peter Laviolette. we know Peter Laviolette on the bench. You know, we've seen the 24/7s with him with the Flyers. We saw it in Nashville. The guy can get fired up.
Yeah.
And people like to see that, especially when the team is struggling. John's temperament is not that. You know, his record in New Jersey was unremarkable, but you also have to keep in mind the kind of team he was hired to coach in New Jersey. If I'm not mistaken, the only team he had that was expected to do good things was his last team, the team that traded for PK Subban, that had Jack Hughes, that signed Wayne Simmons, and then they were really bad at the beginning of the season, and he got fired, you know, a couple months in. But, you know, if not for Taylor Hall's MVP season, they probably wouldn't have made the playoffs the 1 year that he made the playoffs. So I think that context sometimes gets lost too.
I think the other thing about John is, Adam, and I think this is certainly not supposed to come off as a defense, but I think that people really did not understand why he was hired mid-season like the way he was.
Yes, that was an interesting. It was interesting that he was hired full time one day after the previous coach was fired,
And especially considering that, like, there were some other options out there. Some other options came available certainly thereafter. I think Pete DeBoer was fired maybe sometime shortly thereafter.
Pete DeBoer was available at the time.
At the time, okay.
That Peter was fired. Peter Laviolette was fired.
Okay, so but then there were some other options, and people were thinking, you know, make whoever
Carl Taylor
make someone an interim,
the Admirals coach. For those
Make an interim coach, get to the summer, especially considering, I mean, they had no idea what was going to happen with COVID, but get to summer, make a hire then to refocus your team. The instant hire to get a guy who, by the way, you have ties to with US hockey did not go well with a lot of fans. So I think that's part of it too. It's the demeanor that you're talking about. It's the product on the ice we're seeing. It's the circumstances around the hire. It's all of that doesn't sit well with people. Could it work out? I have no idea. I don't think so, because I think that the end is probably near for Boyle, which means the end is probably near for Hines. But John Hines is at this point kind of a meh person that is involved in this whole situation that you don't really have any feelings one way or the other. The only thing I will say in defense, as someone who gets to ask him questions, and I know you'll agree with this, he's really good about answering questions. He will actually answer questions completely and fully, which
doesn't hate my guts like the previous coach.
Yeah, but the other guy seems so much happier now that he's in Washington. The videos are going all over the place.
What the fuck is that about? Sorry. Like, that's just what drives me nuts. Like, I remember when he got hired, I told all of my colleagues in Washington, like, I warned them. I said, like, he's like, this is what it's going to be like. And that they started, I think, 6-0-3, and they've lost 4 consecutive regulation games. And apparently he has yet to blow up. And I'm like, what the hell? Like, I mean, maybe it's because he's on Zoom, so it's a little bit different. But, like, you know, this warm and cuddly joking, like, when I remember our dear friend Joe Rexroad was like, when did Peter Laviolette develop a sense of humor? Because he definitely didn't have one for the 5 years he was here when I was here. Yeah, like, I think he was replaced by some sort of cyborg. No, you know, I don't think it's actually Peter.
I don't think it was a Peter problem. I think it was a you problem.
It was a me problem. I think
he just hated you so much.
What's the hate about me, though? I'm a very nice person.
You're a lovely human being, but you know, and you know what quibbles I have about the way that the Nashville Predators organization is run.
Yeah.
From many different angles, and the coddling that they felt necessary, which is something that we're going to bring up, because I was told that this conversation was going to be soft. I was told that I would not receive any criticism.
Soft media.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe you should have been a little softer, Ving, and you would have had a better relationship with the coach.
I've heard that take multiple times, and Alex has been, you know, in Nashville longer than I have. So, you know, he can speak to this more than I can, but you know, like, it's a take I've heard from multiple people. So you know, the main culprit recently was our friend Nick Hale.
Acquaintance,
you know, hanger on, whatever you want to call him. You know, I like Nick, But the,
I
the,
do too.
The point mostly. Being that he was the he talked about it on 104.5 last week. He tweeted about it on Saturday, and I've never quite understood that argument. And look, we in Nashville, we know this. We are not New York. We are not Boston. We are not Los Angeles. You know, Trevor Bauer basically blackballed The Athletic because of things we wrote about him after the Dodgers signed him. Yeah. Like, if he thought he was getting off easy signing with the Dodgers instead of the Mets, the guy was nuts, because LA is a pretty big market too. And I think part, and like, you can even separate it between the Titans and the Predators. You know, because more people cover the Titans than the Predators, there are fewer voices. There are, you know, there are fewer points of view. And so, you know, our friend Robbie Stanley was talking about this on his morning show, I think either yesterday or today. Like, I understand fans are angry, and I know that they want those of us that have access to hold these players and coaches and managers accountable. But I think one thing that gets lost in translation is that you can hold people accountable, but you also have to understand that we are not, you know, someone on the other side of a phone app or Twitter screen that can yell at these people with no repercussions. Like, I have to work with these people every day. We bring up Peter Laviolette. Peter Laviolette, like, in his half season with Nashville last year, our relationship deteriorated because I took it upon myself to ask him on multiple occasions how he was feeling about his job status while the team was struggling, culminating with me asking him about it on national television after they lost to the Dallas Stars at the Winter Classic.
And then he got fired.
And then he got fired 5 days later. But like, I had to work with him every day, and I had to make the conscious decision to ask him those questions, knowing that everything else I ask him might either get ignored or answered in a curt fashion. So this isn't me being scared, quote unquote, of the people who I have to work for, because I'm not scared of any of them. But I also have to keep in mind that while I'm still holding them accountable, I do need them in order to do my job accurately. So there is a fine line you have to tread between holding them accountable and not being this sort of firebrand who's yelling and screaming at them.
Well, that's the thing I think people don't understand, Alex, is that, you know, because I deal with this at least all of last season with Mike Vrabel and defense, right? Why aren't you shouting him down in the post game press conferences because they didn't get a sack?
Because Vrabel will kick the shit out of you.
Well, and also, you know, Vingan's not scared of any of the Preds people. I'm not scared of Mike Vrabel anymore, but they were that first year. I'm not gonna lie, I was pretty intimidated by Mike. I
mean, he would stuff your ass in a locker, not you specifically, but he is definitely give you a wedgie and give you a swirly and then stuff you in a locker.
Are you kidding me? If I take one more glance at the third field, I could physically see Mike reaching through the Zoom call and choking me out. Anyway, Alex, I think people don't understand that we're not fans. Like, right. This is, they are treating this through their perspective. And the Nick Cale thing, Nick is a friend. I make jokes, whatever. But it's a lazy opinion by somebody in the media. One, he's an embittered ex-employee of the Nashville Predators radio network or radio flagship. So, of course, he's going to have these emotions. And, of course, he's going to let it spill over now that he's no longer inhibited by the place that employs him. He has a lot of built-up stuff. All of us who were there for a while have a lot of built-up stuff. Some of us handle it a little better than other people. Nick's piling on to an easy argument to make because the narrative's out there about Preds media. And also, the fans are doing what fans do, which is to look at it from the perspective of a fan and say, I'm upset that my team stinks. Why aren't you yelling at this person who I believe to be the face of responsibility for why my team stinks? Why are you, as a representative or as a vessel between the fans and the team, not yelling at this person the way that I would yell at this person? Because it's not our job to yell at these people.
Yeah, the yelling is dumb. It's just outright silly. People want this like viral video of a reporter and they want John Tortorella yelling at Larry Brooks, that video. Like, they want that. They want that viral moment where a coach is yelling at a reporter.
Well, listen, I want that too.
But not to be mad. I'm a man. I'm a man, I'm 40. They want that. They want that stuff.
That was pre Mike Gundy mullet, by the way, I think.
Right.
And pre OAN.
But here's what I've been saying, and what I just keep screaming into the void that apparently fans do not want to hear, and that is the media does hold the team accountable in the only way that they can. What they can do is they can ask the coach and the players exact questions about why did you have this line? Why did you break up this line that was working really well? Or why didn't you do X with a certain move decision, you know, to David Poile? Or what happened on that shift where, you know, this particular moment went wrong? Or what happened with the penalty kill? The media does do that. What I think happens is people listen to what sometimes are the louder voices, and that is the ones that come directly from the team. Without getting into names here, but there are people who are paid directly by the team who do cover the team in a friendly way. I mean, they just do. I mean, my instinct would be that this tweet that Adam's talking about, that the guy was listening to the broadcast maybe. And I think that's probably a fair assumption about what was being said. I mean, the broadcast is generally pretty fair to the team. Sometimes they get upset about things that the team did, but most of the time it's just, oh, the other team did really well, or the officiating was bad. I really like the broadcast. I think they're pretty good at what they do. But if that's what you're basing the media criticism on, you're not doing enough homework here, because legitimate media sources that are actually calling things out and have written multiple articles. And I'm talking about Adam, I'm talking about myself, I'm talking about Justin Bradford, I'm talking about the guys over at On the Forecheck who I've worked with in the past. They all write critical stuff. I mean, this is not just everyone has banded together and said, okay, we're just going to be really nice to them and we're not going to talk about how bad they are. Because you can't even like go find a positive article that I've written about the Predators over the last year. You can't find it. You can't find this stuff. I mean, it doesn't exist.
Yeah. You're asking people to be discerning.
Right. Yes.
And that's where we find ourselves. That's why people aren't reading Vingan's. Well, I'm sure people read Vingan's article, but they'll
never. People read it. Trust me.
I know that this kind of started around, you know, holding someone like John Hines accountable. But Adam's right. Like, if you go in there and just say, John, that was one of the worst decisions that I've ever seen you make with a team. How dare you? Those fans paid money. How can you allow that product on the ice to look so bad? What is his response to that? What would he even say? I'm sorry, Adam. We're just coaching a team over here. Next question. There would be no response that would make any sense. I mean, you cannot become an angry fan in that media setting. You have to ask a unbiased, important, and relevant question. And also, by the way, you got to do it pretty quickly because there's other people that have questions.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's about nuance. Question asking is hard. It is hard just because, as Alex said, there's a certain nuance that goes into it. You know, to use the previous example about Peter Laviolette, I never asked Peter straight up, why do you deserve your job? Or do you think you should be fired? Because if someone asks me, do you think you should be fired? What the hell am I going to say? Of course not. I'm not going to do that. But like, I think the first time I asked him about it, I asked him if he had been feeling any pressure from above, meaning management and ownership, about the way the team had been playing.
Yeah.
But like the point of the thing is, how are you feeling about how you're doing? You know, there's a certain way to ask that question. It's all about nuance. And you know, to John Hines's credit, as Alex previously said, John is willing to answer questions thoughtfully. Even if you disagree with the content of the question, of the answer, he's willing to answer questions thoughtfully. And, you know, he gives you a lot more to digest. And sometimes you're not going to like what he has to say. Mm-hmm. But at least he gives it a shot. And, you know, I respect him for that. But I get it. It kind of goes back to what we were talking about all the way at the beginning. Fans are pissed. I've never seen anything. You know, I covered some, you know, before I moved here, I covered some teams in Washington that did not live up to expectations. You know, the early, you know, the 2011 through 15 Washington Capitals were supposed to be a lot better than they were. They finally broke through, of course, but Alex Ovechkin and Nicholas Backstrom didn't win the Stanley Cup, right? You know, they probably won it later than they should have. And even then, I have never seen a fan base angrier with the direction of a franchise than I have this season with this Predators team. And I've been covering the NHL for close to a decade, and I've never seen it like this.
That's interesting.
What a gas bag phrase. I've been covering the NHL for close
to I have.
No, I know. It's just we're at the stage of our lives, Vingan, where we start citing our own credentials, and it makes me very happy.
I mean, I'm almost 32 and I'm married. So, I mean, I'm a gas bag now. Yeah, and so there it is.
It didn't take me near that long. So I commend you for holding out as long as you did. Adam Vingan, you can read him at The Athletic for
and
all
yell
of
at me. And you can yell at me him. At The Athletic.
Yeah. And in fact, you can even get his private thoughts if you get an Athletic subscription. His not his private thoughts, but his private Predators thoughts. I believe we've coined the term only fangs as opposed to only fans for the thoughts of Adam Vingan in game. So subscribe to The Athletic wherever it is that you get your online publications. You can read Alex Doherty for all of the coverage that he is giving us at A2ZSportsNashville.com. And listen to this podcast feed. If you're listening to me, you're probably listening to Alex every Sunday with the Preds Nashcast. Subscribe, rate, and review. We love the 5 stars. Give us all the 5 stars. Alex and Link deserve them more than I do. So subscribe, rate, and review. Boys, it's been a pleasure.
My own podcast on a rival network on your podcast?
Hell yeah. What do you mean?
Well, our dear friend Braden Gall and I have a Predators podcast on his new 440 Sports podcast network called The Gold Standard.
Okay.
We do have our own branded cocktail at Jasper's, the sports bar on West End Avenue. It's called The Gold Standard. It's basically an alcoholic Arnold Palmer. I highly suggest it. We record every Tuesday and episodes go up on Wednesday. So when you're not listening to this podcast or any of the other podcasts on the AZ Sports Network and you want to hear me yelling even more than I did today, you should listen to that podcast.
Subscribe, rate, and review. We have too many friends is what I found out. We have friends.
We do have a lot of friends. Let's all name one person we don't like.
Ooh. Who wants to start? I don't mind starting. I just
do
need
it.
Okay. So one person in media or just in general?
Anybody. Doesn't matter.
Who don't I like? I have a very, because I have a lot of people that I dislike.
This is so political.
No, it's really not, because I feel like I lash out at people all the time. I want it to mean something. I just don't want to. I don't want to say a name that it's. I'm just going to toss out in the ether. I want there to be legitimate beef. I really, really dislike Justin Beasley's sports opinions. I hate them. I hate them to my core. I hate them.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, is he still covering sports?
Oh, I don't know. Is he not?
I actually do watch local news.
Maybe that's why.
People that has local news on, usually as I'm waiting for the national news cut to come on.
Yeah.
So if I watch ABC World News or NBC Nightly News and I have one of those channels on at 5, I'll watch it. And the last several times I've seen Beasley, he's been doing human interest stories that are not sports related.
Okay. So I don't know. Maybe they're transitioning him into a big Joe on the go where he's moving further and further away from sports. And it's not a personal dislike of Justin. I just find his sports opinions largely to be stupid. your turn, Vingan.
Pass.
You started this.
Oh, pass. Bullshit. I just spent the better part of 5 minutes trying to think of people. Now I don't outright hate anybody off the top of my head, but
I'm gonna pass too.
Oh, both of you.
We set you up for that one. We set you up.
Well, that's fine. Justin knows how I feel about his sports opinions. That's
I don't know. I don't. Nobody's. There were plenty of people on Twitter on Saturday night who were on my shit list.
I was gonna say. I think there's a lot of people on Twitter I could name. There are people on Twitter that really bug me. And in terms
of people that anybody would know, name names.
No.
Let me see. Maybe they've commented on something that I've.
Well, listen. If you two all do it, I hate Nick Cale on Twitter. I think I largely hate Nick Cale on Twitter. I think his Twitter is the worst thing in local sports, 100%.
Okay.
Stillman's Twitter is pretty bad too.
No, I think Nick Cale is worse than Stillman.
That's a low bar.
No. Because Stillman genuinely, to his core, I think believes all of the stupid shit that he says.
Okay.
Like, I really do think that Jared is so caught up in finding ways to make his arguments that he inherently talks himself into thinking these ways. And I don't dispute Nick Cale's authenticity, but Nick Cale's Twitter is just so damn cringeworthy every time I see it, whether it be announcements that nobody gives a shit about, or whether it be going after the Preds media because you're an embittered former host on the Preds flagship radio station. Like, I just, there are so many things that Nick does wrong on Twitter, or at least wrong from my perspective, that it makes me, it influences my opinion of him as a person. And maybe that's not fair. I don't know. But listen, this is now two people that I've named, and you two have done nothing.
Okay, I've got one. And this will not make me popular with a certain segment of Preds fans or with a certain segment of people who live in Nashville or in the South in general.
Okay.
But I am not a big fan, and I really just kind of generally dislike Mike Fisher.
Really? Interesting.
I really found him very cold and uninviting in terms of whenever you were talking to him. And while I won't go on a political rant here, I think some of the politics are opposite of mine. Having said that, he also has one of the most incredible plays that I've ever seen in individual plays in Predators history. And that would be the pass that he made to Victor Arvidsson to spring that goal. Yes. I mean, in terms of like best plays ever in the franchise history, that's one of the most mind blowing plays I've ever seen.
Is that Stanley Cup final?
Yeah. Game three. Yeah. Yes. Or maybe game four. One of the two.
Definitely one of the games in Nashville. So it's either game three or game four.
Incredible play. Just kind of dislike the person.
I mean, I get that. I mean, I'm sure there's somebody out in the world who has pissed me off lately.
Quit being a chicken shit, Vegan. Name a name.
I haven't been out of the house much lately because...
You've been on the internet. There are plenty of people that piss you off on the internet.
Yeah, well, that's the point of the internet, is to have people make you mad.
Is it?
Yeah, being mad online. That's a hobby for a lot of people. I mean, Buck, you basically made a career out of being mad.
How do you feel about Chris Martel?
Do you not like Chris Martel?
Martel is a goofball. You know,
he's not someone that anyone could dislike, but he's
hard to like. Martel also has some interesting takes on Twitter too. Martel is a wonderful human being.
Yeah.
You know, he has like 18 children. You know, he doesn't actually have 18 children, Buck. I think he has 4 kids.
Still, that's basically like 18.
But he's like 30 or 31, and he already got 4 kids. I'm almost 32. I don't have any kids. I mean, I affectionately called his... I would always affectionately call his kids the petting zoo. Like, he just keeps accruing them. Martel is a... Martel is one of those people who, and I say this, you know, as I said, I very much like Chris Martel. His Twitter personality and his real personality could not be more, you know, polarized. And that's what's always interesting. It's always interesting when you meet people who you knew first on Twitter, and then you meet them in person and they're completely different people. I mean, it happens all the time. Mm. Like, people build themselves a brand on Twitter, and then when you meet them in person, they're shyer or they're less in your face, you know. Are you pointing at yourself, Buck?
No, I think I honestly, you know, maybe I'm self-involved that way, but I think I'm pretty much on point from
I think so.
Yeah, I mean, pretty close. The only thing you're not doing is literally painting your fingernails. Like, that's the only thing you're not doing.
You don't know that. I had a pedicure scheduled today, but the winter weather canceled it. So I tried to go get my, I don't put clear coat on them or nothing, but I like to get my nails buffed every once in
a while. Hey, that's fine. Do what you got to do. Okay, that was about that. I'm sorry for taking us down that rabbit hole.
No, it's just, you know, we've now discerned through the course of this podcast who the soft media member in the Preds is. It's Adam Vingan.
We had to prove we weren't soft, and so we finally did that.
I know, Vingan didn't do it. He wouldn't name a name, so now he's soft.
I mean, it's not the worst thing I've heard about myself, so I can live with it.
See you, boys.
All right.
Thanks.